So, good evening to all of you. Welcome. Thanks so much for coming. And today we are continuing with our series of lectures that we have started a few months ago, and we are doing a little bit here and there regarding Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Sri Brahma. After being shown a very unique exhibition or degree of majesty as well as intimacy. Brahma is having these two experiences and he's overwhelmed by the two of them for different reasons, in different moments. The intimacy of Vrindavan, the informality that Krishna has with his devotees in this very secret abode, which makes Brahma think that Krishna is not as extraordinary as he thought. Well, actually, he was seeing something too extraordinary. It was so extraordinary that it seemed ordinary. So when he tried to, he was first bewildered, if you will, by that madhurya or that intimacy, then he acted trying to put that to test, and eventually only to realize that the topmost level of Aishwarya or majesty was present in the background of that intimacy. And then he was again bewildered by that. Madhurya and Aishwarya, which is of course one of the many, many important philosophical points of this Brahma Vimohan Lila, which is in Vrindavan there is so much intimacy, but all that intimacy is backed by majesty. If you take that majesty out, there's no more intimacy. It's just ordinary dealings. Like the example that Vishwanatha Thakur gives is, if you have a baby, you will be attracted to the baby, but Krishna as a baby is especially attractive, with all respect to other babies. Why? Because he's God. And despite that, he's a baby. So he's a baby means madhurya, the sweetness and intimacy. Aishwarya is he's God. And because he's God, he's especially charmed as a baby. If you put another baby, he's charmed, but not that charmed because that baby is not God. Christina is not God, just in case. So you were thinking about that. As a devotee of God, for us it's even more important. But the idea is that the important point, the so-called human-like pastimes of Krishna, so-called in the sense that they seem human, but actually they are super transcendental. So Brahma had an experience of these two things. And therefore, after being bewildered by both Aishwarya and Madhurya, intimacy and majesty, he feels himself in deep sense need of repentance and remorse, and starts to pray and beg forgiveness from Bhagavan, and we are studying those prayers. So today we are seeing verse number 17. There are 40 verses, so today is lecture 19, where we will be seeing verse 17, since we have two introductory classes at the very beginning. But let's do some brief recap of what we saw yesterday. Was yesterday?
Day before.
Yesterday. No, yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. Yeah, sounds like 12 years or more. In separation of the Vaishnava. So yesterday we spoke about Brahma recalling the vision of Yashoda, regarding what she saw in the mouth of inside Krishna's mouth. So I repeat the verse from yesterday, brief words, and then we go to today's verse. Brahma prayed, "My dear Lord, in this divine descent, you have proved that you are the supreme controller of Maya. Although you are now within this universe, the whole universal creation is within your transcendental body. A fact you demonstrated by exhibiting the universe within your belly before your mother, Yashoda." So here Brahma is, without officially saying so, he's establishing the foundation for our philosophical Achintya Vida Abhid. Everything is Krishna, But at the same time, everything is not Krishna, in the sense that everything is an energy of Krishna. But all those energies are inseparable from Krishna. So that's what we call panentheism, which means all in God. But interestingly, Brahma here is saying, not only everything is in you, the world is inside of you, but you are appear to be inside the world. As is the case now, he's saying, I'm in front of you, you seem to be inhabiting this particular section of the planet. So not only all in God, but God in the world. And at the same time, everything remains inside of you. So Brahma is not only thinking about that, as we say yesterday, he thought a lot about that. He has four heads, and his four heads were really engaged in thinking. We spoke yesterday about how we have to push our thinking capacities and other capacities to their limits, so they show us their limits. Push something to the limit means acknowledging the limits, so we can properly surrender, acknowledging how limited we are in connection to the unlimited. So by one, we could put it like, by fully realizing our limits, we will be able to have a glimpse of the unlimited. You can say like that. How I can have a glimpse of the infinite, the unlimited? Try to push yourself to your limits. Again, when I'm saying this, I'm not promoting neurosis and over-endeavor and going crazy and nothing like that. But try to realize the limits of mind, reason, intellect, and so on, sense reach. And that will give you in itself a hint about an intimation of the unlimited. So all this that Brahma is saying, this is preparing him, both him and us, for the Nara Lila, for understanding this human-like pastimes, which seem human, which seem, again, ordinary. Krishna has a medium-sized form, which is unlimited. But if you say medium-sized, doesn't seem unlimited. Welcome to the Krishna's paradox. And it's an eternal form, as we say. Form generally limits. In Krishna's case, his form is facilitating. So that's the idea of eternal form, ever expanding. One name that Brahma addresses Krishna with here, in every one of the verses, Brahma is addressing Krishna with different names. And every time, every name has a particular purpose according to the context. Here is Maya Dhamana, which is subduer of Maya. In other words, not only subduer of Maya, but Maya, you are the source of Maya. What to speak of, you are the controller of that. Maya is sustaining you. Although you seem to be subject, apparently, to the loss of this world, three-dimensional, appearing in this world, but you are the source of this world, appearing in the world, avatar. So try to imagine how interesting it is. The source of the whole world, entering the world, and remaining the source, of course, without being affected by it. So as we mentioned yesterday, basically the conclusion is there is no difference between the internal and the external aspects of Krishna's body. There are no internal or external for Krishna. And also we concluded that with this type of statements, Brahma is trying to emphasize, as the whole world is inside of you, he gives the example of the womb. Like the mother has a womb and babies inside. So I'm part of this world, Brahma is saying, so I'm inside of you. Although now it seems I'm in front of you, outside of you. Since everything is inside of you, I'm inside of you. I'm like your baby in your womb. And as the mother forgives his baby when the baby is kicking her from the womb, the mother won't get offended. It's not say, oh, aparat. Mama aparat. The mother won't say it like this. She will smile and say, oh, how beautiful. So similarly, Brahma is saying, I did some mischief some minutes ago. I tried to kidnap your friends and all this. I'm like a baby in your womb. So it was just like some little kicking. So please do not be angry with me. Forgive me. Even you can smile like the mother will find it charming. So with full humility saying that, he's not trying to manipulate Krishna. just in case. If you study the previous verses, you will see how Brahma really expressed deep humility, deep felt. So now he's presenting this more joking like terms, but at the same time trying to speak to Krishna with certain intimacy and confidence, which is his prospect in Sakya Bhava. So in today's verse, Brahma will again refer to this recent experience, what Krishna showed to him regarding Yashoda, as we saw, Brahma had darshan of that whole episode, and he will continue establishing this idea that the body of Bhagavan is all-pervading. So this is an important point that our acharyas have emphasized over and over again, because it doesn't seem, again, extraordinary, all-pervading. It's not four arms, no beginning, no end. It's just like one calf, one cow, one peacock feather. But it's at the same time all-pervading. The source of Narayana. So somehow this verse is connected to the previous one. It's basically like an extension of the previous one, today's verse. I'll share some brief words that Jiva Goswami mentions in Bhagavad Sandarbha, Anucheda 35, trying to create some further thread, connection between today's verse and the previous one. So he says, Jiva Goswami, in the previous verse, by using the term Maya Dhamana, or subduer of Maya, Brahma indicated, out of your mercy, you showed this whole material creation within your divine form in order to demonstrate that it's real. Now, Jiva Goswami says, in order to clarify this still further and to erase any misunderstanding about the reality of the Lord, Brahma again establishes a similar point. Sometimes it's called in Sanskrit stuna nikanana nyaya, which means like the logic or the maxim of pounding the post. It's to say that when you are pounding a post, you generally have the post, you won't do once, okay, pound. No, you will do 1, 2, 3 minimum, maybe 108, but at least 3 times, they say. So similarly, in Shastra, many times when something wants to be properly emphasized, that will be repeated. Sometimes even repeated literally, like the famous verses we hear sometimes. Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Maiva Kivalam, Kalonasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Atiranjata. It's not that the author of the verse has some problem with pronunciation and repetition. He wants to make Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Koi, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoy. I don't know. Ampurnama, Da Purnami, Dam Purnat, Purnam, Udachati, Purnasya, Purnam, Adaya, Purnam, Eva, Vasishati. Why so many times Purnam? You can ask. The verse, the Upanishads want to make a point. Bhagavan is Purna, complete, in every sense. So here, somehow, there's another way of pounding the post by basically elaborating on the previous verse and trying to make that further established in us. So I'll recite it. Today we have it here with us. So I will recite how we can do. I will recite one line and you can repeat after me. Okay? And so on. Yasya kuksho idam sarvam.
Yasya kuksho idam sarvam.
Satmam bhati yatha tatha.
Satmam bhati yatha tatha.
Tatvaya piha tat sarvam.
Tatvaya piha tat sarvam.
Kimidam mayaya vina.
Kimidam mayaya vina.
Yasya kuksha vidam sarvam.
Yasya kuksha vidam sarvam.
Satmam bhati yatha tatha.
Satmam bhati yatha tatha.
Tatvaya piha tat sarvam.
Tatvaya piha tat sarvam.
Kimidam mayaya vina.
Kimidam mayaya vina.
Well, so the translation says, just as this entire universe, including you, appeared within your belly, so it is now manifested here, externally, in the same exact form. How could such things happen unless arranged by your Maya? Okay, I'm reading the same thing?
Yes.
Just in case. Okay. So, again, it's an elaboration, as you can see, of the previous verse. And further establishing how it's possible for such a thing to happen by your Maya. Of course, now we will see what does he mean by your Maya. But let's go first to the word by word of every, the meaning of every term in this verse, and then we try to elaborate through some of the different commentaries. So the first word is yasya. So yasya means of whom. Kukshab means within the abdomen or within the belly. Idam sarvam. Idam means this, referring to Brahma, is referring to this cosmic manifestation. And sarvam means what?
All.
All. Very good. So sa atmam, second line. Sa atmam means including yourself. So within the abdomen, all the cosmic manifestation was including himself. When Yashoda looked, remember. Bhati means is manifested. Yatha, tatha. Yatha means just as, and tatha means in that way. So the first two lines refer to this, to what was found inside Krishna's belly, if you will, or say, look by looking at Krishna's mouth. Then the third line say, tat twayi apiha tat sarvam. So tat means that. Twayi means within you. Api means although, some words are by sandhi put together, api and iha. So api means although, iha means here, externally. And so now he's referring to what's happening outside, quote unquote, Krishna's belly. Tat sarvam, again. Tat means that, again, the cosmic manifestation, and sarvam means all or the whole. And the last line is kind of a the question or the reply to the question, kim idam mayaya abhina. So kim means how, idam means this, referring to the world within Krishna's mouth, mayaya abhina, without maya. In other words, how could this happen without your maya? No? In other words, because of your maya, which will refer to yoga maya, as we'll say, such a thing can happen, which otherwise may seem maybe totally contradictory. That the same thing outside is appearing inside, and the two of them are exactly the same thing, and not one being a reflection of the other. So let's try to to elaborate in this regard. I will begin by quoting a few words from my Guru Maharaj in his commentary on this verse that will come in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandala. And he briefly paraphrases this verse by presenting a dialogue between Brahma and Krishna in connection to what was said in the previous verse. So Brahma is saying to Krishna, and it is not that the world appearing outside of you is merely reflected and thus appearing only in that sense as a reflection within you. This is a point that most of the commentators will be making. Now you will understand further. Some may make the argument, okay, one of the two, the world appearing outside and the world appearing inside, one is the reflection of the other, maybe? And Krishna will say, and Brahma is saying here, no, it's not the case. It's not that one is the reflection of the other. So Krishna replies to him, how is that possible? Remember, Krishna is fully in Brajabhav, morsel of food, looking for his friends. And Brahma is telling you all this Aishwaric stuff. And Krishna is like, how is possible that what you are saying? So Brahma is saying, such is your Achintya Shakti, your Yoga Maya. And that's the only way we can explain some things. Of course, we shouldn't rush into this world Achintya. That can also be a dangerous tactic. I remember it's one of our good brothers, Guru Nishtha Prabhu, some months ago. I mean, he's doing a daily series of devotional comics, interesting ones. And one day he did something like, it was funny. It's called something like the atomic option or something like this, or the atomic button, I don't remember. And this was only one scene. There was a crowd of devotees, someone was asking a difficult question. It happens sometimes. Difficult to answer question, or basically a question that you don't know what to say. And you don't want to say, I don't know. So the other side of the comic shows the speaker who is sweating like nothing, no, and don't want to acknowledge, I don't know. And he with his hand is like pressing like one button, and the button says, Achintya. No. Achintya means inconceivable. So sometimes, unfortunately, that's a very cheap way of replying to what I don't know. Instead of saying, I don't know, Achintya, Prabhu. It's Achintya. Unconceivable. So stop asking. No, something like that. Stop thinking. Achintya. But as we mentioned these days, we have to think, we have to push. But there's a point where we realize thinking cannot enter here. So then we can say Achintya after doing our homework, if you will. So Brahma is doing his homework, as we say. So he has the right to say Achintya. How can we explain that these two expressions of the universe, outside and inside of you, are exactly the same because of your Achintya Shakti, your potency which can make the impossible possible? Yoga Maya, we call it sometimes. Sometimes it is called Ascharya Shakti. Ascharya means, Krishna uses this word at the end of his description of the soul, at the end of second chapter of the Gita. He begins saying, the soul is what the soul is not. The soul cannot be burned, cannot be killed, cannot be dried, cannot be burned, cannot be this, it's not this, it's not dying, it's not born, it's negatively what the soul is not. And at the end, basically the very last verse, he's using the word Ascharya. Three times, again, Stuna Nikanana Nyaya, pounding the post. Ascharya, Ascharya, Ascharya Vat. Ascharya means wonderful, astonishing. To Krishna, basically, the soul is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So sometimes this potency of Krishna called Achintya Shakti is also called Ascharya Shakti. Like wonderful potency, and then a type of energy of influence that can make very unique magic, if you want to put it like that, in which both immanence and transcendence are present simultaneously. This is a very situation here. Krishna is transcendental to the world, but in the world, but beyond the world, but in the world. And you can say the same thing over and over again. So this is possible by this type of potency in which all the things that are contradiction for us in our present stage are resolved there. So again, the main point here, and in relation to what Brahma have said in the previous verse, some of the acharyas present, a doubt may be raised. As you know, many of our acharyas, they invoke some arguments to their own points to make their points even more strong. It's not that this is perfectly understood, nobody can ask anything. They themselves bring the questions. And they themselves bring the best possible arguments you can ever imagine. If you study the Sandarvas of Jiva Goswami, you will be astounded. How, not only because of the positive content, the point he's making, but the arguments he's making against his own points. You could never think like to make such arguments. And he himself is creating them. Probably his actual opposers may not be able to create that level of arguments. So he says, your arguments won't be that good, so I will present better ones. And I will deal with that. So everything is really comprehensively addressed. So in these verses also, sometimes possible arguments or doubts are presented. And again, the idea here is someone may raise the question, why not to think that the universe that Yashoda saw outside of Krishna was a product of Maya, Maya Shakti, material world created by Maya Shakti, and the universe inside of Krishna was a reflection of that other universe. That will be one of the main points that almost all of the acharyas will make. And they will make the point, this verse is a reply to that possible question. Or another possible point is, why to not to consider that both universes, the ones inside and outside, are transcendental, and therefore there is no need to accept Maya. We can cancel the existence of Maya Shakti altogether. So to dispel these two doubts, is that Brahma is speaking this verse, it is saying. He's saying here, bhati yatta tata, bhati yatta tata. Which means, exists outside exactly as it exists inside. So Brahma is making this point. The external universe and the one inside are not different. There's no difference between the two. It's not that one is a reflection and so on. So let's try to... Today's class may be a little bit heady, so I hope you prepare yourself for that. Not that much, but a little more than usual. So let's begin with Sridhar Swami's commentary, Bhavartha Deepika, his famous ancient tika or commentary on the Bhagavatam. And he will immediately address the same point, basically. So he says that the gist, the essence of this verse, is as follows. So he paraphrases somehow Brahma. If there were a reflection in you who are akin to a mirror, it would then appear in reverse. Reflections appear in reverse, as compared to the outside world, but there is no reflection. In addition, there will not be any appearance of you in you. Remember that Yashoda saw Krishna in Krishna. So if the inside reflect in this, if what she saw inside Krishna is a reflection of the outside, and Krishna is somehow like the mirror that reflects one to the other, when you look at the mirror, you don't see the mirror in the mirror. No. But in this case, Krishna was the mirror. Yashoda saw the mirror in the so-called reflection, Krishna. Krishna was the mirror, and Krishna was inside the reflection. And you follow my point? So with all this, they are trying to say, no, it's not a reflection. It's not to be considered a reflection. In other words, if the universe inside of Krishna's mouth will be a reflection, it could not be exactly the same as the external universe for some of these reasons. As we say, a mirror appears in reverse to the original image. I hope all of you have basic experience of that. Have you ever looked into a mirror? I mean, there's no need to do that. You can survive without a mirror, no problem. No? Okay. Some people will survive with a mirror. That's their survival daily too. At some point, there was no mirror, remember. People survive without cell phone, without mirror. They look just in the reflection of the water and immediately move to show that's not so permanent, what you're reflecting. So again, a reflection is a mirror image and appears in reverse. So this was not the experience between these two worlds that Yashoda saw outside and inside of Krishna. Also, interestingly, if you reflect a three-dimensional object in a mirror, it appears in two-dimensional way in the mirror. You don't have three-dimensional reflection. It's two-dimensional. But Yashoda had three-dimensional in both cases. So again, it's not a reflection. And only visible objects can have a reflection. Now, if you reflect something in the mirror, it's only the image that is reflected. You are not reflecting the smell, the aroma, the sounds, all the other. While in these two universes, Yashoda had an experience of not only reflected imagery, but sounds, smells, taste, touch, all of them. You follow my point? So because of all this, we cannot say that it was a reflection. And as we say, an image never contains its own reflecting medium, the mirror. The mirror is a reflecting medium. But you don't see the mirror in the mirror. You see whatever you put in front of the mirror. So, but just so that was, again, if in this case we say Krishna is the mirror, and one universe is reflected in other through by looking at his mouth, Krishna shouldn't appear there because he's the mirror. But when Yashoda looks inside, the mirror was inside. No, Krishna was inside. The word is Satman. No, Satman. Satman means along with yourself. So Brahma is saying, when Yashoda look inside of you, you are there also. You are not just reflecting something that appeared there. So you were seen inside the universe, that it appeared inside of you. So of course the conclusion is, again, this is most amazing. like the example we say the other day, it's like a pot that is inside the room, but the room is contained within the pot. Generally, I don't think that's your experience. If you go to a pot, a bottle in your house, it's not that you look inside and the house is inside the bottle or the pot. And if you look inside that house, inside the pot is inside the house that is inside the pot, and so on. Like how they call this? Mamushka dynamics. That you open and there's another, you open, there's another. What's the name?
Matryoshka.
Okay. But this is has no end. No? In this world, you at one point there's just something like this and it's over, game over. But here's like, the more you open, the more it expands in the opposite. So this is what Yashoda saw. So let's briefly recall for a minute what Yashoda saw. I think all of you were in, or some of you in yesterday's class, but we can go through again. So as we know, there are two versions of it. The most well-known is in connection to Krishna being reported, you say, to Yashoda, that he has been eating mud. So Balaram was the one, and his other friends as well. They went to Yashoda and say, try to enter into the mood. No? Like it will happen here. No? Try to connect with make the Naralila bond with our human sensibilities. So the senior, the elder boy that was commanded by the mother, if he does some mischief, you let me know. Okay. So Balaram is, as my Guru Maharaj will say, it's considered like Krishna's elder brother, but elder not for too many days, even for too many years, for too many months, but a few days. But that's enough for him to enter into that role, and Yashoda signed that to him. So Balaram and his friends go to Yashoda Ma and say, Ma, Krishna ate there today. So you can imagine, I mean, Yashoda is the very personification of Vatsalya, and she's totally obsession that Krishna, nothing may happen to Krishna. Every time he goes, she's invoking all these different protection mantras and kavachas and blessing and praying to Narasimhadev for him to be protected. And now he's knowing my child was eating mud. It's like he may die. And in her Vatsalya mind, she will like exaggerate that like thousands of times. So she caught him by the hand and said, you are naughty boy. Why you have been eating mud? Clay. If you are hungry, why don't come here? I mean, I always offering breast meal, whatever you need, and instead you're just eating mud. No, how is it possible? So as we know, Krishna, again, he's not making a show. That's an important point to make always. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur makes this point. Krishna is afraid at this moment, trembling, crying, because he knows I'll be chastised. If I confess, I mean, he did it. I mean, let's confess. We have to side with Balaram here. No, he did it, but he knew if I admit my misdeed, somehow I'll be chastised by Yashoda. I don't want to be chastised. I'm afraid of that. He's really afraid. That's my point. He's not making a show. He's really into the character. We are Naralila means, as my Guru Maharaj will say, God is playing, and when you absorb in play, you play really hard to the point that you forget all the other sense of identity. You are that. So he's not making a show. He's not thinking, I'm actually God, the source of everyone and every time personified is afraid of me, so I don't have to be afraid of this lady. Nothing of that is coming. He's totally covered by Lila Shakti Yogamaya. So of course Krishna, what does he starts to deny that? How do you say? Vociferously, like, no, I didn't do it. No, I didn't do it. But just as if Balaram told me that, your friends told me that. Krishna said, no, I didn't do it. All my friends are jealous and envious of me because I always defeat them in daily wrestling. No? So they are angry with me because they cannot defeat me, so now they want to. They're complotting. Some conspiration theory is here. So they devise a whole plan to put me in trouble. And not only that, but today I see that Balaram himself had joined them in their plot to have me punished. And Krishna starts to present transcendental victim consciousness. Everyone is against me. I didn't do anything. Or actually, you were the one who did the whole thing. And Krishna, of course, after that said, why you are listening to them? Go straight to the proof. Go to the evidence. If I ate mud, I will be in my mouth. So you can see. I open my mouth and you can see. See for yourself. Don't let be misled by rumors. Gramyakarta. So of course we know. He opens the mouth. Just says, okay, open your mouth. I'll examine. So she looks at that and she sees the whole universe. She sees herself inside that universe, looking inside Krishna's mouth. And inside that looking of Krishna's mouth, she sees the whole universe. And inside that universe, she sees herself looking at Krishna's mouth. And so on. No, there's no end to that spiral sequence, if you will. So, Krishna's kind of saying, you know, like, without saying that, saying, if you say that I ate mud, for many things we can say in this connection, the chair has made very charming commentaries. If you say I ate mud, well, you are looking at the whole universe is here. So basically, how to say, the whole universe has also eaten mud because it's inside of me. So you should chastise everyone in the universe. Why only me? That's unfair. That's how Krishna will like child logic to the Yashoda. You chastise every single living entity in the whole universe. Why with me? Why begin with me? I mean, everyone is to blame in that case. And generally, of course, Krishna will say also, I mean, to eat mud means you take a piece of something and you put that externally, you ingest that, you put it in your mouth and you ingest that. But if the whole universe is already in my mouth, how can you ask me basically whether I have picked a minute portion of the same universe to put in my mouth? Which is a piece of mud, it's a piece of the universe, but the whole universe is inside. So how is that I pick something, I put, it's already there? So Krishna is like watching, looking at his mouth, like, please, what do you say? And of course we know, we will see now, in a few moments, how Yashoda thought about that. She had different theories in mind to explain to herself what's going on here. But anyhow, let's continue with Sanatana Goswami's commentary. All of the commentaries go in a very similar line, but from different, slightly different nuanced perspective. So Sanatana Goswami says that in this verse, Brahma is speaking, in case Krishna were to tell him. Again, most of these verses that Charak will say, this verse is said by Brahma in case Krishna were to argue. Whatever, this and point. And Brahma replies this. And Krishna will to say this, Brahma replies this. So Krishna may say here, in between verses, is it not that a reflection is always unreal, and what is perceived directly, not reflected, is always real? Or, Sanatana Goswami says, the verse is a reply to this hypothetical question. This material world is real, and so is that material world, inside, outside. Can both be real? So the gist of the verse, Sanatana Goswami says, when two things have the same form, generally speaking, one of the two is unreal, like with the idea of the reflection, by the logical reason of bimba pratibimba, which means the original and its reflection. But Brahma replies here, the whole universe appear along with you, inside you. The same thing, it's not... The general logic is when two things seem the same, one is taken as the reflection, the other as the original. But in this case, as we already showed, it's not a reflection. It's exactly the same. So the normal laws are being broken here. So we are entering to another realm. Both universes are real, basically. That's what Sila Sanatana Goswami mentions. So again, all this is in trying to introduce us to the Achintya Shakti of Bhagavan, which basically ranks supreme in the realm of Leela. Everything is moved by that, as we gave some examples this day. Krishna opening his mouth, Damodar Leela, or so many things that seem so normal, but if you start to think, say, it doesn't make sense, as we said the other day. Krishna is trying, Yashoda is trying to bind Krishna, and it's never enough rope, but Krishna is not growing. Krishna remains the same size always. That's an interesting thing, because if he grows, okay, I need more rope, bring more rope. He's expanding. But he's never expanding, he remains the same size. But I bring more rope, but it's never enough. So you don't go to Krishna with a calculator in your hand. No, it will collapse. That's why Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say that the type of bhakti in Vrindavan, it's called Gyan Sunya Bhakti. And Brahma already spoke about that in the beginning of his prayers. And Srila Siddhar Maharaj will translate Gyan Sunya Bhakti as brain dead bhakti. It doesn't mean that don't think. It means you have exhausted the capacity of thinking and you have reached a place where thinking will be an impediment to what's actually taking place there. That will be an unnecessary weapon. That will be a disturbing ingredient in the Leela. Mm-hmm. Because what's taking place there is beyond thinking. That's a difficult thing to say, to even accept, because generally we are so much attached to our thinking, our thinking processes, to our ideas, to how we process reality through our head, and to accept that there is a plane with that's not required, the higher laws are operating there. That's challenging. And of course, it's a gradual process of surrender, and one of the best ways to do that is to use all those functions, again, in the best possible way here, in the service of Krishna, till they show us their limitations, and the entrance of grace, bhakti, samskars, allow us to move and operate with another values. When there is no longer need to think that much. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary. With this we will basically conclude today's lecture. He says a few interesting things. He says, the whole universe with its coverings, which appear within your abdomen, he's paraphrasing Brahma, along with you, exists within you in this form. Since this is incomprehensible by reason, without Maya, how is this possible that the outside universe is the inside world? This means, Jiva Goswami says, it is not possible because Maya has no connection with you. And because of that, the world is not real in the highest sense, like you are real. So what does it mean here? There are different ways of putting the same point. So Jiva Goswami is saying here, the external world is real, but it's not as real as Krishna. Something like it's not this in the same category as the highest reality. But of course it's real. We are not saying that matter is unreal or Maya Shakti is unreal, as we said the other day. What we perceive through illusion is unreal, but illusion is real. That you are in illusion, that's a fact. What you see through illusion, that's not a fact. But you are being illusion, that's a fact. But that energy and that influence is operating on some level, but since Krishna is never touched by that, he operates on another level. He exists on another level of reality. So in that sense, Maya Shakti is real, is existent, but not as real or as existent as Bhagavan, because it never touches him. So again, this point is important to make. So what this is implied here by Jiva Goswami is also is that, again, external world is not the same as Bhagavan in every sense of the term, but it was seen in this way, outside and inside, by the influence of Yoga Maya. So here we are speaking another type of divine illusion operating here. As we know, Yoga Maya is not the same as Mahamaya. Mahamaya operates to create illusion for those affected by the gunas. And Yoga Maya operates to create divine illusion, like Yashoda. She sees Krishna, she doesn't see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You will never hear Yashoda saying, Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam. Not even in a day with fever or any type of delirious thoughts. She will never get to that point, Krishna is God. No. She will have other types of thoughts and delirious transcendental thoughts, but not God. No, just like, no, thank you. So what allows her not to think like that? It's Yoga Maya. A particular type of illusion, in which sense illusion? Of course, for us, this illusion is the highest form of reality, and as this type of madness is the highest form of sobriety. You have to accommodate these paradoxes. Everyone in Vrindavan is mad, in love of Krishna. But that madness is the highest form of being sober. Or you put it like that, free will means to choose which type of madness do you want. The one that you are mad in love of God, or you are mad because you don't have love of God. At the end, you will end up mad somehow. So you pick your madness. Free will, pick your madness. That's our new definition. You speak with the dictionary here in Bulgaria, and please ask them to update the idea of that. Or free will, you choose on the which type of illusion you want to be. Mahamaya, Yogamaya. So, all this is a chintya vidya vid in motion. The world is Bhagavan, but it's not Bhagavan at the same time. But Yashoda is seeing two worlds, one inside, one outside, by the influence of Yoga Maya, who is the operating factor. Because illusion also means that when you are too much aware of something in a particular way, you ignore some other possibilities of that something. Like if I look too much, in that direction, I'm giving my back to that direction. So I'm absorbed there and I'm distracted there. I'm attentive there, full focus there, I'm totally forgotten about that. So when you get totally absorbed in seeing Krishna, as Yashoda sees him, there's no inch, no place for thinking anything else apart that he's my child. She doesn't have even vision, what to speak of seeing him as God. She can't even conceive that Krishna has a romantic life with the gopis and things like that. Like we know, every single day in the morning, when Yashoda goes and Krishna just has run from the Nikunja, from the forest, when she spent the whole night with Sri Radha, and the sun is coming, there's a Nishanta Lila, which is the end of the night. So the sun is coming and Kakati, the she monkey, appears and starts to imitate the voice of Jatila, Radha's mother-in-law. Like if Jatila is coming. Now, before, some parrots and birds try to awaken Radha and Krishna, not working. They are totally absorbed in their divine slumber, samadhi, sleep, transcendental sleep. But the sun is coming and they will be caught. And of course, the intrigue of the Lila is that their love is parakia, is forbidden, is clandestine. Clandestine, is it? Like secret, underground. So the day is coming, the whole brush will awake and they won't be in their respective houses. So they have to wake up. So these monkeys imitate Jatila. So when Jatila is invoked, everything changes there. So at that point, Radha and Krishna by force had to separate. So Krishna somehow returns to his own place. He enters his room. He enters his bed through the window without being seen by anyone. And he sleeps for a while, not too much, because it's already day, and Yashoda will enter the room. And she will see Krishna sleeping and she will start to examine his body like a mother, again, like with the lens of Vatsalya. She will see in Krishna different like bruises in his body and different markings in his face and bitings and how do you say?
Scratches.
Which all of them, of course, came from his last night loving battle with Sri Radha. But Yashoda, again, Yashoda's Vatsalya psychology doesn't leave place for that, even. Again, what to speak of his God? She starts to see all those things through the lens of a mother. And she starts to think, oh, no? Like my Guru Maharaj will say, no, these boys, Krishna again was wrestling with his friends, and I told them, do not treat him too strongly. He's too soft. All his motherly limbs are very soft like butter, but these boys do not care, and they throw him on the ground, and they defeat him, and all these markings are coming from them doing all this. Ah, boys will be boys. And that's her conclusion. She will see all that in the lens of how a mother sees her baby playing with the boys and so on. So, my point is Yogamaya. It's a divine illusion. The facts are different from that. Something else is happening. She cannot see that. So what to imagine on top of that is someone like Uddhava comes, like he did, to Vrindavan. And the first people that he approaches there in the Braj is Nanda and Yashoda. And the proposal he came with is, oh, you are so fortunate because you feel parental affection for your son, who is actually God. So you can imagine Nanda and Yashoda's reaction to that. Nanda Maharaj saying like, Uddha, I heard for so many years that you are such a learned, wise person from everyone. And I'm so surprised to realize now that you are nothing like at all of that. No, how can you think that my Lal is God? And Uddhava's like, what do you mean? He starts to reprove. So now the Upanishad say that, and Nanda Maharaj goes to pratyaksha, to immediate practical experience, and say, no, I know God. I worship Him every day in my altar. I have Narayan in the altar, and He's always peaceful. He's always self-satisfied. That's God. And Krishna is exactly the opposite. He has no peace, full of desires, mischievous. He's a liar. He steals. He doesn't know his affairs with the gopis on top of that. That's what he knows is enough for him to say, he cannot be God. I mean, I have daily practical experience every single day of my life. He's totally needy. If I do not provide him what he asks, he starts to cry. God is not like that. So Uddhava is like, what's going on here? How do I reply to them? What's their logic? What's their psychology? You know? And Yashoda is totally entranced in the background similarly. So things like this. No? So anyhow, Srimati Yashoda Mahai Ki Jai. So let's return to Srila Jiva Goswami's commentaries before we get lost and found and drowned in the ocean of Vatsalya Bhava. So he says in Bhagavad Sandarbha, Anucheda 35, the Lord showed that Braja was inside of him. Going back to what he showed to Yashoda. Vrindavan is inside of him. That was Yashoda's son. While he was standing inside of Vrindavan. Seeing Vrindavan both inside as well as outside of Krishna, Yashoda asked herself. So now come three questions, three speculations that Yashoda had about which are the possible reasons for this to happen. First he said, is this a dream? I'm dreaming, maybe. Well, when you dream, you see some psychedelic stuff. People flying and things that are not possible when you are awoken. So maybe I'm seeing, I should awake. But she realized, we'll see how she proved that this is not the case. This is not the case. Is this a dream first? Is this an illusory creation by the gods' influence? Or maybe my intelligence has become bewildered somehow or other. I mean, this being asked for herself in the 8th chapter of 10th canto when she's seeing that. So the point is that all of these different, if you want to call it speculations or conjectures, none of them were valid. Krishna will somehow confirm that. And why Sridhar Swami comments on this verse? Jiva Goswami says, when Yashoda wondered first, is this a dream? She looked around and realized, oh, everything is normal. She looked outside of the mouth for a moment. That's my point. And she realized, no, I'm not dreaming. I'm awake like every single day. So this is not a dream. So So I'm not dreaming. He marked that one. No, this is not the option. So then is this some form of Maya created by the gods? Or whatever. But she thought, if that will be the case, what they create generally influences other people. But I can see that I'm the only one seeing this. It's not that everyone else is seeing what I'm seeing. So this is not the case. So then maybe my own bewildered intelligence made me see this thing here. So maybe it's that. But the point is, if I had some bewildered intelligence by looking all, how is that I saw Krishna inside the mouth of Krishna? Because again, if it is a reflection and my bewildered intelligence is seeing a reflection, Krishna shouldn't appear in the reflection. How that's happening? And again, inside and outside worlds appear exactly the same. As we say, objects can reflection appear reversed, and so many other differences. So Jiva Goswami says, Yashoda came to the conclusion, the only conclusion left to her, which is, and this is many times how the Vatsalya camp will conclude in Vrindavan, when Krishna is doing something extraordinary, like lifting Govardhan, that's pretty far out. Imagine your five-year-old child lifting a heel for a week with the smallest finger of the weakest hand. And big heel. It takes like 6 hours to circumambulate that. So, I mean, you're going to deny it. Because before Govardhan Lila, Yashoda and Nanda, many heard, Krishna killed this demon. Because the friends will come report the news of the day. Oh, Krishna killed this giant personality. And Yashoda's, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. All these boys creating new stories every day. But now they were seen face to face, like he's uplifting, lifting this heel for a week. I mean, overt Aishwarya. So how to justify that so Vatsalya is not disturbed, but is nourished. But as we mentioned, the unique psychology of Vrindavan is that even in the face of Aishwarya or majesty, their madhurya, and by madhurya here I do not mean romantic love, I mean intimacy and sweetness, their intimacy, when they see Aishwarya, increases. That's the unique logic. Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives the example. Like, if a mother has a child, and the child eventually becomes the president, you could think, no, president means like Aishwarya. Now he's the president of the country. But for the mother won't change her relationship. It's not that her Vatsalya will shrink. Like, oh, now my child is a president. How will I treat him? Good morning, Mr. President. I'm your mother. Do you think that will happen? No. For the mother will say, oh, how beautiful my baby. Now he's the president. So the most important thing there is my baby. Oh, he became the president. And yeah, okay, but he's my baby. And he's so unique that now he's the president. But all of that is nourishing the my baby. Vatsalya. So this is the same. When Krishna was lifting Govardhan, Yashoda was not thinking, he maybe he's God, how is a five-year-old child can do such an extraordinary thing? She's thinking, she must be hungry. No, so long lifting that, Krishna, come, I'll give you to eat something. Stop lifting that Govardhan. That's her psychology. So her Vatsalya is raising new heights. Or his friends in Sakya will think the same. Krishna, too many days lifting that heel. Why don't you give Govardhan to Sridham? He's stronger than you. He defeats you every single day in wrestling. That's a fact. All of us know. So he's stronger than you. He can lift the heel for more easily. So take a rest and we can massage your arm for a while. So their sake is growing exponentially. And like this with every camp. Nobody thinking, oh, he's God, we shouldn't love him like that because he's doing such an extra, not happening in Braja's landscape. Or sometimes, again, the general justification will be, well, when Krishna was born, Gargacharya said that Narayan will do extraordinary things for him. So, by the grace of Narayan, Krishna was somehow able to do this, do that. So this is the conclusion that Yashoda reaches here, while seeing these two possibilities. Universe outside and inside, Jiva Goswami says, Yashoda came to the only conclusion left to her, which is, this is a manifestation of my own son's natural yogic power. Somehow Krishna has some mystic power by the grace of Narayan, by all the worship that Nanda Maharaj did to having a child before Krishna came. So by the mercy of Narayan, Krishna is endowed with this special capacity. So that's why I'm seeing universe outside and inside. Period. Yashoda is not thinking more than that. Conclusion there, and her vatsalya starts to overflow again. While thinking like this, milk is flowing from her breast more and more. Basically, that's it. So Jiva Goswami says, then Swayam Bhagavan revealed to his mother that her final deliberation was the correct one. That first he says, this is a dream? No. Some illusion from the devas? No. My bewildered intelligence? No. My son's yogic power? Yes. Of course, she will say yogic power, will say yoga maya. No. Because of that, this is possible. Krishna revealed the simultaneous twofold nature of his own being. Srimad Mahaprabhu ki jai. So Krishna showed, Jiva Goswami said, he showed her that through his inconceivable internal potency, he is endowed with specific medium-sized body, again, apparently limited, while simultaneously being all-pervading. In the Gita, he also says this type of things. I have this body, but this body is all-pervading, although it seems localized. Immanent, transcendent, at the same time. And then after quoting this verse from the Bhagavatam, when Yashoda is thinking why this is happening, Sukadev Goswami says, when Yashoda had realized the truth in this way, my son's yogic power, the Supreme Lord and Controller spread his internal Maya potency, Yoga Maya, in the form of maternal affection for him. In other words, after Yashoda reached her conclusion, automatically she was covered by Vatsalya Bhava. So she was not her Vatsalya was not affected by this incident. That's the point. Her Vatsalya, was not affected in a diminishing way. It was affected in an increasing way. Okay, let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. As usual, Sararta Darshini. He says like this, paraphrasing Brahma. Brahma said, and this is kind of also a summary of what we saw today. Since the external universe and that within the Lord's belly are exactly the same, the universe within his belly must be one created by delusion of the Lord. Again, just as the universe within your belly became visible, the external universe also remained visible when you showed the universal form to your mother. Was the universe exhibited within your belly a reflection of the external universe? How can that be? The universe was there along with you. Can a reflection of a mirror be seen in a mirror? As the universe visible within your belly contain you, so the external universe also contained you. Because there was not even a trace of difference between the two universes, the universe within your belly could not exist without the work of Maya. Taking your mother's realization and mine as proof, now comes the classical end, taking Yashoda's realization and mine, Brahma is speaking, as proof, I conclude that I exist within you by your Yoga Maya potency. Therefore, I pray that you will please forgive me for my offense, as a mother forgives her child who kicks her while residing in the womb. So all this, if you will, complex or fancy philosophical presentation by Brahma is converging in this idea. Therefore, as everything is within you, I am within you, and like a mother forgives the kicking of the baby, please forgive my offense. So he's really in need. He feels really in need of being receiving forgiveness. So he's trying to make his best possible case so he can obtain Krishna's compassion and mercy because of, as we know, what he did in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. So this is the classical conclusion of basically every single verse. We should bear that in mind. Every single verse, basically, of the Brahma Stuti will conclude with this idea. Forgive me. Give me your compassion. Remember, Brahma is at the feet of Krishna, crying and imploring causeless mercy in this particular case. But he makes a pretty comprehensive presentation to conclude. Therefore, please forgive me. So we should also be smart and skillful. And not just say, hey, forgive me, please forgive me. But you have to know why forgive me. Why you need compassion? You have to really think about that. And present your case in the most well thought out way as much as possible. Not again trying to manipulate Krishna or something, but you trying yourself to make sense of your own predicament and what you actually need to transcend it. So anyhow, some words and in the next verse that I think we will see in 2 days or something, because tomorrow we have Srivast Thakur's Tirubhav Mahotsav. So Brahma will continue to relate his own experience about Krishna's body. Still we have a series of verses so revolving around this idea of the uniqueness of Krishna's medium-sized, all-pervading, transcendental form. So we'll leave here. I don't know if there are any questions before finishing. Guru Bhakya, someone else raise your hand. Yeah.
So we're talking about this, like there's actually no option between like this madness and that madness. I was wondering, like, so influence of Mahamaya and influence of Yogamaya. What is the position of, well, Mayavadis? They seem that they are under the influence of Mahamaya. But then we've got just those maybe. Those neutral impersonalists that get the grace and they get liberation. So, is it the action of Yogamaya that they, that Yogamaya, you know, creates illusion that there is oneness only?
Yeah, of course. When I say you have only these two options, in one sense, I was kind of simplifying the whole thing. I was not entering into the nuance and details of that because, of course, we have this. If you will, intermediate possibility of Brahma Sayuja, where in one sense there is no Mahamaya. I mean, there is no Maya in Brahman, because Nirgun Brahman, Nirgun means there is no guna, so you cannot speak about Mahamaya there. But also there is no Yogamaya in the sense of Yogamaya is there to facilitate Lila. But there's no Lila. We never hear Brahman, Lila in Brahman, and there is loving interaction. There's nobody. I mean, there's no sense of individuality, so Yogamaya is not required, we could say. So, of course, in that sense, we could say there's one third option between the two types of illusion or the two types of madness as I was presenting it, which, of course, is so little interesting for us that basically, we are not even quoting that as an option. That's maybe why I was not including in the list. But of course, is there. But I wouldn't say that actually, of course, we wouldn't say that those who reside there, if you want to put it in somewhere, are in illusion. Because if that means in illusion, they can't stay there, basically. An illusion means Maya, and there is no Maya, so there cannot be an illusion. Of course, the point is they are especially engrossed and, if you will, attracted and identified with one particular face of the Absolute, which is Brahman. I mean, Brahman is one of the three aspects of the Absolute. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. So Brahman is the Absolute, approached from a particular way. And the point is that the nature of Brahman is nirgun. So for you to experience Brahman, you have to pay the price, which is you have to become devoid of any all types of perception of any distinction whatsoever. Because if some distinction remains, then you are not experiencing Brahman. And of course, when you reach that experience, you won't even think in terms of experiencing Brahman. Because if I say, I am experiencing Brahman, you have Brahman and you have I.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not happening in Brahman. So there is no I. And in that sense, there is no experience. Because experience means someone is experiencing something. But in Brahman, you don't find this type of difference, if you will. There is only Brahman. It's difficult to put into words, you can imagine. No? So yeah, basically we wouldn't say, of course, again, we in our tradition, we hear things like Kaivalyam, Narakayate, like that type of realities, it's hell. But that's being said from the perspective of a Gaudiya Vaishnava, who has so much, and especially someone like Prabodhananda Saraswati, who speaks that verse in his Chaitanya Chandramrita. And that's he's a Gaudiya Vaishnava, a very special Gaudiya Vaishnava who expresses himself in a very ecstatic way. No? Like having, the verse says, Kaivalyam Narakayati Tridashapur Akashapushpayati Durdantendriya Kala Sarpa Patalai Pratkata Damsrayati Vishwapurnam Sukhayati Vidhimahendra Dishakitayati. This is last word line. Vaibhavatam tam eva gaurastunam. Anyhow, one word is missing. But he's saying, for he who has received a silent glance of Mahaprabhu's mercy, that's at the end of the verse, but in the translation comes at the beginning, and he starts to mention all the list of effects of someone who has received that mercy. Silent glance from Mahaprabhu. So he starts saying Kaivalyam Narakayate, the attainment of Kaivalyam or Brahma Sayuja is like hell. Tridashapur Akashapushpayate, the attainment of Swarga Loka of the heavenly planets is like a flower in the sky, which means it's like a phantasmagoria. It doesn't exist. No. Durdantendriya pa, what they say, then he said the senses which generally are compared like dangerous monsters, they are like a snake whose fangs have been taken out. Vishwapurnam Sukhayate, the world is seen as a place of joy. Well, as Gumaraj will say, Krishna in the Gita says the opposite. He's saying the world is miserable for those who have not received the silent glance of Mahaprabhu. Vidhi Mahendra dis Chakitayate, and Indra and other demigods are no better than insects. So of course he's not offending the devas, because you can take that and say, okay, let's criticize everyone and demigods, they are all inferior. He's just speaking out of ecstatic appreciation of the power of Mahaprabhu's sidelong glance, which reduces to ashes all these other goals that are the goal to attain for mostly everyone. But again, if you don't receive that silent glance, you don't have that particular samskar, you will find probably Brahma Sayuja is pretty exciting. For some people, that's interesting. No more suffering, eternal peace, eternal being. They say, yeah, I go there. Because why? They are suffering so much. But technically speaking, it's not that there is illusion there. No? Again, although we say that's hell, in one sense, that's from a subjective Gaudiya lens. But objectively, impartially speaking, of course, it's not hell. It's hell for us because we are so much attracted to love and interaction. So there's no possibility of that for eternity. That's hell for us. But for some other people, that's not hell. And there's place to respect that. That's one type of mukti mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So we cannot go against the Bhagavatam. We cannot cross out the word mukti as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to do at one point. He tried that, as you know, he was converted by Mahaprabhu, and when he read verse from here, from Brahma Stuti, Tati Nukampam, the last line, Jivita Jamukti Pade Sadaya Bhak. He said, I don't like this word mukti. It's so ugly. We have to change the Bhagavatam. Mahaprabhu said, no, you cannot change that. For some reason, mukti is there. Of course, there's a way of understanding mukti there as something in connection to bhakti, but some other places, the Bhagavatam is speaking about Salokya, Samipya, Sarshti, Sarupya. Ekatvam. Ekatvam is Brahman Sayuja, it's unity in Brahman. So there's place for that. We are not interested, but there's place for that. So there's no need to. But yeah, that will be an in-between experience in relation to the two illusions, if you will, or the two madnesses, and so on.
Yogis are in a better situation. Like they, this passive adoration and this shantaras, from this perspective, it's like they're in a waiting room for.
Yeah, there are different types of yogis. Okay, yogis are not that all of them are pointing to the same goal. Some of them are pointing to Brahman, and some others. Yeah, we know that shantarasa will be a more appealing prospect for them. So yeah, it's not like. Yogis go every all of them to the same place. They are yogis motivated by adopting yoga sadhana as a way to attain Brahman and so on. But yeah, for some of them there's the option of Santaras for sure, which is not the same as Brahma Sayuja, but somehow they are still not that much an influence. Like Yoga Maya is not that operative, if you will. Yeah. Because there's no interaction with Bhagavan. As we read in Shastra, of the four types of devotional mukti, only Samipya implies personal interaction of service with Bhagavan. Sarupya, Salokya, and Sarshti do not necessarily include that. You can be residing in the same planet as Narayan in Vaikuntha. He's somewhere in that planet and you are somewhere else in the planet. And for you it's enough. As my Guru said, well, it's cool to reside in the same planet as God. I'm residing in God's planet. Cool. You know, you don't want more. I can see from your faces that you don't have those samskars, but some people have. Or I have a form similar than Narayan, Sarupya. Or I have opulence like Narayan, Sarsti. Nothing of those things imply direct relationship of service, loving interaction, lila. So that starts to happen more in from Dasya upwards, if you will. Okay. Any other question before we finish?
Sadhu. I just wondered if on the way, on the spiritual path, if it is okay to actually feel also some attraction to liberation in a sense of or detachment rather, like, because from I think from the material suffering going towards some spiritual realization, one also feel a little bit attraction to being liberated by karmatic results, having peace, having detachment. If it's okay to feel attracted to that.
That's not part of our definition of the bhakti we want to attain. Janma karma adhyana vritam, says Rupa Goswami. So the bhakti we want to attain is unencumbered or not influenced by the desire for jnana and karma and its fruits, some of which is being freed from suffering. But of course, I mean, that's the ideal and the ideal definition of what we want to attain. And Rupa Goswami makes the caution in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, if you get too much attracted to detachment, that may make your heart hard. Because you get too detached from everything. You know, there's people who really culture. I mean, our practice is not about detachment. The Bhagavatam say, Nanirvinanati Shakto Bhakti Yogasya Siddhidha. Someone can attain perfection in bhakti if that person is not too much attached and not too much detached. Why he's saying that? Too much attached materially, you cannot practice bhakti because you are attached to see everything with you in the center instead of Krishna in the center. So you cannot practice bhakti because bhakti means Krishna is the center and you revolve around it. But too much detached means you are so detached from everything that you cannot engage anything in Krishna's service. You don't see anything as the energy of Krishna because you are detached from everything. And of course, there is detachment in bhakti. We spoke about that thing in Halacha. we want detachment, but we only want the detachment that comes as a byproduct of bhakti. Mm. Not detachment by itself, unto itself, cultured separately. It's not that, okay, I will be more detached now. For what? Like the other day, I think it was near Jali Kadasi, and someone asked me, I don't remember who, maybe some of you present here, I don't know. Someone asked me, Maharaj, today is near Jali Kadasi, and I've heard that by fasting completely on this day, Krishna will be more pleased. So, but I was wondering, how does it happen? So I appreciate that. That's a good question. Because she was asking, I mean, she was not in denial of doing that, but she was curious, why just not eating gives Krishna pleasure? Why just not doing something gives Krishna pleasure? I thought that bhakti was about doing something for Krishna's pleasure and instead of stop doing stuff. Do you follow my point? So I appreciate it. He was like, and I told her, you're right. Actually, Krishna is not pleased by fasting. Krishna is pleased by dedicating yourself to Him. And if by that dedication you forget to eat and sleep and drink as a byproduct, okay, He will be pleased by that. Someone asked that to Srila Siddhar Maharaj once. So what does it mean, near Jal Ekadasi? Near Jal means without water. Because sometimes devotees do that like this. Now he said that you get so absorbed in Shravana, Kirtan, and all these devotional limbs that you forgot to eat and drink water. Like implying, engaging the positive aspect of bhakti, and it's as a byproduct of that, the other thing happens, okay. But if you are too disturbed because you are fasting and you cannot engage properly in Shravan, Kirtan, and so on, they break your fast and engage in bhakti properly. You follow my point? It's not about, oh, today is Janmashtami. And what's Janmashtami about? It's about fasting till midnight. No, that's not Janmashtami. What's Ekadasi about? You cannot eat pizza. You cannot eat grains. No, that's not Ekadasi about. That's a secondary aspect, byproduct of Ekadasi, but that's not the main thing. So if you are the whole Janmashtami just thinking about the 108 preparations that will be offered at midnight, and your mind is just thinking how you will go one through another, exploring each one of the different tastes, the whole day is going like that, better you eat something immediately so you can really absorb it. The one who is having birthday on that day. It's not your birthday. So, and again, this Shastra is glorifying detachment by from that side. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Mahaprabhu Bhakta Ganir Vairagya Pradam Yaha Deki Prithahoy Gaura Bhagavan. Mahaprabhu Bhakta Ganir Vairagya. One of the main attributes of the associates of Mahaprabhu is Vairagya, detachment. And they say, Yaha Deki Prithahoy Gaura Bhagavan. When Gaura Bhagavan is seeing that detachment in his devotees, he's so happy. So, which is that detachment? Again, the one who comes as a byproduct of bhakti. It's not that they are dry renunciants. Like we were speaking some days ago in Alacham Panihati festival about Raghunath Das Goswami. He was so renounced, I mean, extremely renounced. You hear his level of renunciation, you start to tremble. So you may think, okay, he was really detached. No, he was really attached. And he showed that level of attachment by the natural detachment that came as a byproduct of that. If you read his prayers, his positive expressions of love towards Sri Radha in his compositions and the way he conducted in bhajan and chant and get so absorbed, then you can understand, okay, the detachment came as a result of that. He was not thinking, I will be more detached, I will be more austere, I will concentrate and... Again, I mean, speaking about Raghunath Das Goswami. I know that for some devotees in the beginning, they may be suffering too much and they may want to stop suffering, but also that's tricky because, of course, I understand you don't want to suffer. I'm not promoting suffering, but also I will say that there is a form of suffering in transcendence. I mean, in Golok Vrindavan, they suffer a lot every day. When they do not see Krishna, do not think they are suffering. Of course, this is a different type of suffering. And you have to understand that. You have to allow a form of suffering in your life. Because if you are too much about, I don't want to suffer, I don't want to suffer, I don't want to suffer, you will end up in Brahman or some Santa Rasa, but not in Leela, in the Leela we want to go, where there is suffering on a daily basis. But it's sweet. Although externally it seems like poison, internally it tastes like nectar. So, I wouldn't say we have to stop suffering. I would say we have to learn to suffer. Learn from suffering and learn to suffer. Not stop suffering. Life, goal of life is not stop suffering.
The suffering feels more like the suffering because you do not have enough attraction or you're sidetracked by material ideas, desires, whatever. Otherwise, yeah, the material suffering is going on a daily basis, actually. But what is more torturing feels this, that you don't have enough, enough attraction to devotion.
So, but the point is that then the problem is not so much that I'm suffering, but that I don't have attraction to devotion.
Yeah, which is the biggest suffering.
So the solution is, how do I increase my attraction to devotion? Not so much how do I stop suffering. Yeah. Like Mahaprabhu was saying, I mean, I understand it, but Mahaprabhu was saying, Durdaiva Mitrishami Hajidina Anurag. All these things are in the holy name, and I have no attraction for that. And he's suffering. He's representing us. So he's suffering for that, and we should suffer for that. Again, not in a neurotic way, but you should suffer. I mean, you want to love Krishna, and you realize, I'm not loving Krishna. And then you realize, I'm still so selfish, and I'm so fearful. And so, again, not to the point of neurosis and discouragement, but also not to the point of, I don't want to see anything negative in me, because you become like a too delicate doll that nobody can touch or say anything. So we have to acknowledge, again, not to the point of neurosis, because you start to chastise yourself too much that you end up practicing altogether, but not to the point of complacency, where nobody can tell me anything. I'm okay. I'm doing perfect. Krishna is merciful. Yes, but you should act accordingly. So yeah, for us, of course, again, there are different degrees of suffering. We have the suffering of the Bada Jiva, who is suffering because of illusion and karmic reaction and blah, blah, blah. We have the suffering of the Siddha, or the perfected being, like Mahaprabhu in the Gambira, putting his head on the walls and crying. And we cannot imitate that. And I don't think, maybe many of you may not be yet attracted to be there. Because we don't fully understand what's going on there, actually, internally. So we have also an in-between suffering, which is the suffering of a sadhaka. There is some form of suffering in every stage, as a Vada Jiva, as a sadhaka, as a siddha, as a conditioned soul, as a practitioner, as a perfected being. There is a different form, but suffering is always there in some form. I'm saying this because somehow in our mind we may have this idea, I don't want any form of suffering at any moment ever. But maybe that has only to do with the type of suffering you only know till now. So we should be open to the possibility that there is sweetness in suffering. For example, everything in relation to Krishna is sweet. He is sweet. Too sweet. Be careful if you have diabetes. Maduram, maduram. So everything in connection to him is sweet. Of course, we are not there in the Leela yet, but somehow we can suffer in a way that is sweet. For example, other example is compassion. Compassion. We should be compassionate. What does it mean being compassionate? I'm suffering by seeing your suffering. I'm suffering. If I'm not suffering, I'm not being compassionate. It's compassionate implies suffering. But it's a suffering that is expanding your heart. So there's some sweetness there. If the heart is expanding, welcome that suffering. I'm saying this so for us to start to learn to think in different way. Or there's a way to think about suffering in a heart expanding form. So similarly, if I don't know, like Brahma here, if I commit a very great mistake and I sincerely, humbly repent, I'm suffering. But there is some truth there, and that will attract a higher form of revelation. So there is place for that. It's okay. But again, in a way that is sustainable. I mean, we should be careful that our suffering or our lamentation doesn't become discouraging in our practice. So we always have to apply that scanner, no? That thermometer. Is my lamentation upgrading my sadhana? Or I'm getting more and more depressed, more and more distracted, and actually more and more self-centered. I am this, I am so low, I am so rascal, I am, and at the end of the day, it's only a list, long list of I ams. Oh, Krishna said, that's boring. So that's our daily introspection. But yeah, of course, we have to allow, again, we have to learn to suffer and learn from suffering. Again, if we are suffering, you don't think just, when will this go as soon as possible? It won't go. Because you are suffering because you are not learning something in particular. There is some lesson that is knocking on your door. We choose to label that suffering. But probably suffering is my denial to open the door to the lesson that is knocking on my door. When you open, when you are willing to learn, to hear what was the teaching wants to be conveyed to you, there's no more suffering. Generally, suffering is more connected to a resistance to surrender, a resistance of acceptance, certain denial of reality. We are not willing to see the bigger picture. So we suffer. That's a way to put it. Srila Sermas once said that. All our problems happen because of lack of conception. That's interesting. Like implying all your suffering comes because you insist in seeing reality with a lens that is too small for what you need now. You need to expand the frame of reality. No? Till now, this helped. Now you need this. But you are not accepting that, and you insist in seeing reality through the keyhole. It's no longer enough. So you are suffering. You need to grow and see things in a broader way, in a deeper way. So if you are suffering, means that's calling me to grow. And when you are growing, you suffer also. When you are a baby and your teeth come, oh, it's so painful. But you are growing. Or your arms, the muscles start to move. Oh, you are growing. And if you have not used your arm for 20 years and you start to move it, that will hurt. So now as bhaktas, we are trying to exercise some internal muscles that maybe we have not used for lifetimes. So that may hurt. But it's not that it's a symptom that something is going on wrong necessarily. Maybe just a symptom that something's taking place. But we have to understand what's taking place so we don't get misled. Oh, I'm suffering, so something wrong must be going on. Maybe not. Again, I'm speaking general different possibilities. You have to see how they apply in your daily life. But the idea is we have to pay a more close attention to suffering. Not just like, get out of here. Don't disturb me. Don't bother me. But hear, learn, and so on. Okay, so we can stop here. See you tomorrow for Srivas Thakur's disappearance day in the evening. Tirubhav Mahottam. Srila Gurudev ki jai. Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premananda.